Hello there, this is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, with this month's news and information bulletin for friends and members of the club for May 2022. I am Andrew, VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. Details of when to hear these news and information broadcasts are available at the club website, www.raotc.org.au. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you missed the original news broadcast from the RAOTC website. You may have heard that some of our regular broadcast team have experienced some significant health issues, and at one stage there was some doubt as to whether or not these broadcasts would actually continue. The news and information broadcast will be continuing. A whip around of the RAOTC Committee of Management arrived at the decision that if these broadcasts were to cease, this may well be detrimental to promoting the image of the club. I'm going to give it a go for a little while. I don't intend at this stage to take it over, although we'll be helping out, and anyone who has personally met Bruce will know that his boots will be very difficult to fill. However, I'm willing to give it a go. At present, our OTN editor, Bill, VK3BR, is a fill-in replacement in the role of broadcast coordinator. If anyone listening feels they may be able to help out in any small way in contributing to these broadcasts, please contact us via email, raotc@raotc.org.au. Alternately, there are some phone numbers located on the homepage of the club's website. I haven't got as many suitable jokes to end the broadcast, that is, none that are suitable to put on air. However, there is a joke this month. Club news. After nearly 30 years, the final Melbourne luncheon has taken place at the Bentley Club. The guest speaker at the luncheon was Rodney Richards, a pilot who presented a presentation about Angel Flight Australia. The owners of the Bentley Club have decided to sell it for a residential housing development, and it is due to cease trading later this year. I'm glad to inform you that the RAOTC Management Committee is actively seeking an alternate venue, with several already in mind. So please stand by for further details in future news bulletins. New members. Today I am pleased to announce that Bob Tyrrell, a VK3 Bravo November Charlie, has become new full member 1833 on the 7th of April 2022. Welcome, Bob. Please feel free to join in the callbacks after the broadcast. Silent Keys. It is with deep regret that we record the passing of the following members. Colin Durrell, a VK3 Uniform Delta Charlie, RAOTC member number 1244, became a silent key on the 19th of March 2022. Brian Baker, a VK3 Hotel Bravo, RAOTC member number 1093, became a silent key on the 6th of April 2022. Ken Morgan, VK3 Charlie Echo Kilo, RAOTC member number 1457, became a silent key on the 7th of April 2022. Let us pause a moment in memory of our departed colleagues. Membership renewals. A gentle reminder to those 80-odd members who have not yet renewed their RAOTC club membership. The annual membership renewals fall due on the 30th of April each year. If your RAOTC membership expired this year, please renew for a further period. Details of how to pay monies to the RAOTC are detailed on the website at www.reotc.org.au. If you have any queries about your membership renewal, please contact our membership officer, Bill, VK3BR, on 0416 177 027 or by email to reotc@reotc.org.au. Once again, that phone number, 0416 177 027.
Hello everyone, this is Clive, VK6 Charlie Sierra Whiskey, reminding you that the next lunchtime meeting for members and friends of the REOTC is at the Bayswater Hotel, Bayswater, starting at around midday, and that the buffet is back on the menu once again. Everyone's welcome to join in and have an eyeball QSO, but do remember that WA public health rules apply in all restaurants.
You're listening to VK3 Old Timers News, VK3ATN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia. This month we have three articles for you. First up is Ron, VK3AFW, who talks about weak signal work using a computer. Followed by Clive, VK6CSW, who recalls a column in Electronics Australia, with particular reference to various proposals of FM broadcasting in Australia. And finally, Bill, VK3BR, tells us a little about Oliver Heaviside. Now, these three articles were first broadcast in May 2012.
Hello, members and other listeners. As winter approaches, I've been thinking about some of my local skeds and having to run the gauntlet of rain, wind, and possibly hail to get to my outside shack. I also thought again about those of us who have restrictions on outside antennas. This led to the construction of two aerial systems, which I have placed under the roof of my garage. It has a tiled roof, but there is some metal bracing and some girders and some electrical wiring. In short, not an ideal antenna location, but quite typical. If successful, it could mean not getting wet and also gaining some practical experience in operating with a stealth antenna that might suit those of us with restrictions. The results so far are interesting and encouraging. One aerial is a quad band mobile whip to which I have fitted radials for each band. It covers 10 metres through to 70 centimetres and is fine for general listening on these bands and quite okay for QSOs via repeaters or with locals on simplex. The second antenna is a 21 MHz dipole placed just under and parallel with the tiling. This gives an open inverted V arrangement. Over the first few days of using this dipole, I've worked Canada and many stations around Japan and a few VKs. Good signals have been heard right across Europe and also from South Africa. So, successful DX operation is possible with a stealth antenna placed in a pretty ordinary environment. Is there a catch? Well, yes. I haven't tried phone operation, so maybe it won't be so good with that. I have, in fact, been using JT65, the weak signal digital mode. This allows the power level to be dropped to 50 or even 25 watts, thereby greatly reducing the possibility of interference to entertainment systems, etc., something that is important for unobtrusive operation in a retirement home, for example. Most of the contacts could have been made on CW, but I have stuck to the keyboard for the evaluation. JT65 is very, very effective for weak signal conditions, but the expense is a message transfer rate of only 3 words per minute. This is overcome to some extent by using standard abbreviations. It is normal to receive clear text messages from stations whose signals are so weak you could not hear them. And of course the converse applies. Your signals do not have to be discernible by ear for perfect copy by the other guy. So, if you're about to downsize your accommodation and the rules prohibit an external antenna, consider an under-the-roof dipole for HF. or a multi-band whip antenna with radials for VHF and UHF. The 21 MHz dipole is not too large to fit into most roof spaces, and end loading could be used to put it on any lower amateur band. The 15 metre band is better suited than 20 metres to successful use of modest power levels and offers worldwide DX or local contacts. The JT65 mode compensates for the lower effectiveness of the hidden antenna as compared to an external one with a clear takeoff. I know other operators are using similar setups, so this is not groundbreaking research, but merely confirmation of what can be done. As they used to say in one well-known advertisement, please consider. Until next time, good DX and 73.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. And now over to Clive, VK6CSW.
Looking back, when thumbing through some 1987 issues of Electronics Australia recently, I was reminded of a regular column entitled 50 and 25 Years Ago, consisting of extracts from EA's predecessor magazines, Wireless Weekly and Radio Television and Hobbies. This year, 2012, makes these items 75 and 50 years ago. I thought that listeners might find some of these snippets, particularly where they have a radio or electronics flavour, interesting and, in at least some circumstances, be able to relate to them personally. In this first item, published 75 years ago in April 1937, Wireless Weekly describes the latest offering from Peyton Instruments, Sydney, a firm long gone, but in fact whose name will be familiar to many old-timers. The name does still live on as University Peyton of Rydalmere, New South Wales, but bears precious little resemblance to the original family company. The item reads, Oscillograph. We recently received for inspection the latest product of the Peyton Electrical Instrument Company, namely the highly interesting model M1 Palec cathode ray oscillograph, which incorporates a 1-inch 913 tube. The specifications of the instrument, as supplied by the manufacturers, are as follows. The instrument is equipped with horizontal and vertical shifts to enable the picture to be positioned to any part of the screen. Focus and intensity controls are provided for sharp definition. Both plates, horizontal and vertical, have independent amplifiers which enable very small EMFs to be viewed. These special amplifiers are flat from 50 to 100,000 cycles per second. Well, how times have changed. And I wonder too if they supplied magnifying glasses for that 1-inch screen. The same issue of EA reprinted the following from Radio, Television and Hobbies 50 years ago in April 1962. It concerns the then ongoing debate about the introduction of FM radio into Australia, which no doubt many old-timers will recall. FM smokescreen. The very large group of listeners who were dismayed some months ago by the termination of FM broadcasting ground their teeth in further frustration at a statement by the Postmaster General, Mr. Davidson, on March the 8th. Replying in Parliament to a question by Mr. Einfeld, the Minister said, space would be made available in the ultra-high frequency band for a continuation of frequency modulation broadcasts if a fairly general desire to have such a service reinstated were indicated by listeners generally. As yet, I have not been informed of any such general desire. What kind of double talk is this? If only a fraction of those listeners who expressed their intention of doing so actually wrote to their local member, then a very considerable number of letters must have reached Canberra. Did the minister, by some strange circumstance, not hear of these letters, or were the people who wrote them written off as hi-fi cranks whose opinions didn't count?
Thank you, Clive. You're listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. Oliver Heaviside. Last month I talked about one of the lesser known names of the many people involved in the discovery and development of what we know today as radio, Reginald Aubrey Fessenden. This month the subject will be Oliver Heaviside. As radio amateurs, we know, or we should know, about the E layer, a layer of gas ionized by solar radiation which occurs roughly between 90 and 150 kilometres above the ground. It is one of several layers in the Earth's ionosphere and reflects medium frequency radio waves so that they are propagated beyond the horizon. As we know, this radio wave propagation is affected by the time of day. During daylight hours, the E layer is pressed closer to the ground, which limits how far it can reflect radio waves. However, on the dark side of the Earth, the solar wind drags the ionosphere further away from the ground, which greatly increases the range of reflected radio waves. In other words, the E layer approaches the Earth by day and recedes from it at night. We also know that the range of reflected radio waves is influenced not only by the season, but also by the regular 11-year sunspot cycle and the amount of sunspot activity. The existence of the E layer of the ionosphere, which is also known as the Kennelly-Heaviside layer, was predicted in 1902, independently and almost simultaneously by the American electrical engineer Arthur Edwin Kennelly, the co-inventor of the electric chair, and the British physicist Oliver Heaviside. However, its existence was not proven until 1923 by British scientist Edward V. Appleton, who transmitted radio pulses vertically upward and received the returning pulses from the reflecting layer. Incidentally, Appleton received the 1947 Nobel Prize in Physics for this work. Essentially, Oliver Heaviside was a self-taught British electrical engineer who used James Maxwell's equations to explain the functions of conductance, impedance, and self-inductance, terms which he is believed to have coined, in cable telegraphy, and who also explained the first successful radio broadcast across the Atlantic Ocean in 1901 with his theory that radio waves are caught by a layer of the Earth's atmosphere and carried along above the planet's curvature instead of being projected straight into space. Born in 1850, the son of a wood engraver, Heaviside finished his only schooling in 1865. He was 16 and a top student, but he'd failed geometry. He loathed all the business of deducing one fact from another and stated that he meant to invent knowledge, not compute it. He continued full-time study at home in the subjects of telegraphy and electromagnetism until the age of 18. Then, in the only paid employment he ever had, he took a job as a telegraph operator with the Great Northern Telegraph Company. He worked first in Denmark and then in Newcastle upon Tyne and was soon made a chief operator. However, Heaviside continued to study while working and in his early 20s published some research related to electric circuits and telegraphy. In 1874, at the age of 24, because his hearing was damaged by a childhood bout of scarlet fever and his deafness grew progressively more profound as he aged, he quit his telegraphy job and returned to studying full-time on his own at his parents' home in London. His study of James Maxwell's newly published two-volume treatise on electricity and magnetism drew him into the study of electricity. In 1880, Heaviside researched the skin effect in telegraph transmission lines. That same year, he patented, in England, the coaxial cable. Between 1880 and 1887, working from a room in his family's house in London, Heaviside recast Maxwell's mathematical analysis from its original cumbersome form to its modern vector terminology, thereby reducing the original 20 equations in 20 unknowns down to the 4 differential equations in 2 unknowns we now know as Maxwell's equations. In doing so, he gave electric theory its modern shape and form, although Hertz gets the credit for that. It's interesting to note that, admittedly in fine print, Hertz later admitted his ideas came from Heaviside. In 1884, Heaviside picked up the radical new idea of vector analysis. His most important ally was the reclusive American genius J. Willard Gibbs. Vector analysis won out, but only after Heaviside, this shy man with his acid pen, had started a war. He brought that war to full pitch a few years later with something called operational calculus. Basically, Heaviside's operational calculus is a method of solving differential equations by transforming them into ordinary algebraic equations. This caused a great deal of controversy when first introduced, owing to the lack of rigor in his derivation of it. In replying to criticism over his use of operators that were not clearly defined, Heaviside famously said, "Mathematics is an experimental science, and definitions do not come first, but later on." In 1887, still doing full-time research from home, he helped develop transmission line theory. Heaviside showed mathematically that uniformly distributed inductance in a telegraph line would diminish both attenuation and distortion, and that, if the inductance were great enough and the insulation resistance not too high, the circuit would be distortionless, while currents of all frequencies would have equal speeds of propagation. As a result, Heaviside proposed that inductors should be added to telephone and telegraph lines. For political reasons, this was not done. The importance of Heaviside's work remained undiscovered for some time after publication in The Electrician, and so its rights lay in the public domain. The American Telephone and Telegraph Company, AT&T, later extended Heaviside's work and filed for patents covering not only their research, but also the technical method of constructing the coils previously invented by Heaviside. AT&T later offered Heaviside money in exchange for his rights. It is possible that the Bell engineers' respect for Heaviside influenced this offer. However, Heaviside refused the offer, declining to accept any money unless the company were to give him full recognition. Heaviside was chronically poor, making his refusal of the offer even more striking. In 1902, Heaviside proposed the existence of the Kennelly-Heaviside layer, the E layer of the ionosphere which bears his name. Heaviside's proposal included means by which radio signals are transmitted around the Earth's curvature. The existence of the ionosphere was confirmed in 1923. The predictions by Heaviside, combined with Planck's radiation theory, probably discouraged further attempts to detect radio waves from the Sun and other astronomical objects. For whatever reason, there seemed to have been no attempts for 30 years, until Carl Jenksty's development of radio astronomy in 1932. In 1905, Heaviside was given an honorary doctorate by the University of Göttingen in Germany. In 1909, he grew sick of fighting and faded off to Torquay in southwest England. There, he lived out his last 25 years in a bitter retreat. In 1922, he became the first recipient of the Faraday Medal, which was established that year. He died at Torquay in Devon on the 3rd of February 1925. Most of his recognition was gained posthumously, although Heaviside's name is not seen much today. However, his brilliant works have been woven into the fabric of many textbooks. Like vector analysis, Heaviside's calculus stood the test of time. So did the rest of his work. He supplied the theory for long-distance telephones, and his mathematics served and shaped engineering. There is no doubt that Heaviside changed the face of mathematics and science for many decades. You're listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations.
Amateur radio celebrates the ABC's 90th anniversary. Many of our listeners will have noticed that the watermark in the lower right-hand corner of the screen on ABC television depicts ABC 90. During 2022, amateur radio operators across Australia will be helping the ABC to celebrate its 90th anniversary. The special event call sign VK90ABC is being used by VK Amateurs to share this good news story with fellow amateur radio operators across Australia and around the world. Already there have been two interviews with ABC radio stations, with Paul, VK5PAS, interviewed by ABC Riverland broadcaster Matt Stevens, and Andy, VK3VKT, being interviewed by Macca on Australia All Over. You can listen to these interviews by heading to the website vk90abc.net and following the links. VK90ABC really is a good news story for amateur radio and a great way to promote the ABC's 90th anniversary. If you'd like to be part of this special event and use the call sign, just head to the website vk90abc.net, read the policy of use, and then click the Book the ABC link. If you have any questions or would like more information, please send an email to info@vk90abc.net. REOTC members are welcome to apply. Help us celebrate the ABC's 90th anniversary and promote our hobby. Now, this item was submitted by REOTC member Chris, VK3, Quebec Bravo. You're listening to VK3 Old Timers News, VK3ATN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia.
In keeping with tradition, we conclude today's broadcast with a short story. An Arab sheikh was admitted to St. Vincent's Hospital for heart surgery, but prior to the surgery, the doctors needed to store blood in case the need arose. The gentleman had a rare type of blood. It couldn't be found locally, so the call went out to all the states. Finally, a Scot was located who had a similar blood type. The Scot willingly donated his blood for the Arab. After the surgery, the Arab sheikh sent the Scotsman, as appreciation for giving his blood, a new BMW, some diamonds and US dollars. A couple of days later, once again the Arab sheikh had to go through a corrective surgery. His doctor telephoned the Scotsman, who was more than happy to donate his blood again. After the second surgery, the Arab sent the Scotsman a thank you card and a jar of sweets. The Scotsman was rather shocked that the Arab this time did not reciprocate his kind gesture as he had anticipated. He phoned the Arab and asked him, "I thought you would be generous again, that you would give me BMW, diamonds and money, but you only gave me a thank you card and a jar of sweets." To which the Arab replied, "Aye, but I now have Scottish blood in my veins." And that humorous story was sent in by Ron VK3AFW.
That's about all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks, where callbacks are taken. We look forward to being with you on the first Monday of next month, except January. 73 from VK3 OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia.